A reading from Matthew chapter 23, verses 1 through 12. Then Jesus said to the crowds and to his disciples, "The teachers of the law and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat, so you must obey them and do everything they tell you. But do not do what they do, for they do not practice what they preach. They tie up heavy loads and put them on men's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to lift a finger to move them. Everything they do is done for men to see. They make their phylacteries wide and the tassels on their garments long. They love the place of honor at banquets and the most important seats in the synagogues. They love to be greeted in the marketplaces and to have men call them rabbi. But you are not to be called rabbi, for you have only one master, and you are all brothers. And do not call anyone on earth father, for you have one Father, and he is in heaven. Nor are you to be called teacher, for you have one teacher, the Christ. The greatest among you will be your servant. For whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted." May the Lord bless our understanding of these words. Matthew 23 is titled in the Bible here as the seven woes. Not seven times Jesus was telling a horse to slow down. And Jesus is saying this to his disciples and the people who are gathered around. And we can just assume that there were quite a few Pharisees there too. And teachers of the law there. Because honestly, all through all the Gospels, the Pharisees were pretty close to Jesus almost all the time. Just following him around, watching what he was doing. And I've already explained that's because there were a whole ton of Pharisees in Israel. It wasn't just a select group, it was a lot of people. And today we can look at this, because Jesus was saying this to his disciples within earshot of the Pharisees, as a warning to Christians of how we are not to act, and how we are to act. Jesus warns, and he makes the point about teachers. Now, we've been going through the book of James in the adult Bible class over here on Sunday mornings, and at the beginning of chapter 3, verse 1 of the book of James, it says, "Not many of you should become teachers, because you should know that teachers will be judged more strictly." There are some translations where it says teachers are held doubly accountable. And Jesus is saying to his disciples, you are going to be teachers. You are going to be the ones who go out into the world and tell people about me, tell people the gospel of the kingdom of God, tell people how to become a follower of Jesus. And it's going to be hard for you. And he's saying this also in earshot of the Pharisees, where they can pick up a little indictment against them, saying, you are already teachers. You sit in the seat of Moses. But you haven't been doing a good job. Jesus liked to do this in his ministry. He liked to tell a story to a group of people who were gathered in one spot, but it was really meant for these other people over here to listen in on. And you know, there's a human psychology part of that that says we are far more likely to believe someone when we are eavesdropping on them. We are far more likely to believe information that is not meant for us, because we feel like if they're not intending us to receive the message, that they're not tailoring it for us. They're not changing what they mean to be for us. So that's why I do this intentionally. When I do a children's message up here, I'm really meaning for you to listen to it. Because I know you're listening in to what I'm saying to them, and you're going to pick up on it almost as much as you're getting from my sermons. Because when I'm talking to you with the sermons, you don't believe me. No. But Jesus did this a lot, where he talked to one group, but he expected another group to be listening in. And so his messages were tailored for them, too.
while he was teaching the disciples. And he says to them, you sit, the teachers of the law sit in Moses' seat. And he says, so that you have to obey them. This is really weird. We expected Jesus to change everything and not be telling them that they should obey what the Pharisees were telling them. How many times did he say, be on guard against the yeast of the Pharisees? Watch out that their poison doesn't get in. Watch out that what they teach doesn't happen to you. But then he follows it up. He says, they sit in Moses' seat, but you're not to do what they do because they don't practice what they preach. And now this is a very important warning for Christians today, because there are tons of Christians out there who go out on Sundays and they say, oh yes, I'm going to dress in my finery and I'm going to teach, talk about Jesus and I'm going to pray to Jesus, and then I'm going to go from the church and I'm going to do something completely against Jesus. But it's all going to be okay because I'm going to go back to church on Sunday morning. And Jesus is saying, no, no, you're a hypocrite if you do this. You have to live the life that you say you live. You have to obey the teachings that you and other people should obey. How many people have kids? How many of you have ever used the phrase, do as I say and not as I do? Now we know as parents that sometimes we have to do things that are counter to what we teach our kids to do because we're in a different situation than them. But most of the time, we don't want that to happen. We're trying to raise our kids up to be good adults, right? We don't want them to be a perfect kid. We want them to be a perfect adult later. It'd help if they became the perfect kid somewhere along the line, too. But, well, we can't have everything. But sometimes it's like, well, you told me not to talk to strangers. But then you went and talked to a stranger. Well, yeah, but Daddy's different. Do as I say and not as I do. That's an example we can always look at right there. There's a wonderful time in the Bible when Jesus is telling people they don't have to wash their hands. Not things you want to teach your kids. I always preface, if there's any kids in the room, when I give a sermon on that passage, I go, this is not what he was talking about. If you use the toilet, wash your hands. Before you eat, wash your hands. They say, but Jesus was saying, I don't have to eat before I wash my hands. That's not what he meant. Jesus would teach things that would sound a little bit weird today, and a little bit weird if they're taken out of context. And so that's why that do as I say, not what I do thing. You have to worry about context. But Jesus was saying that these Pharisees would go out and they'd say, here's exactly how you have to obey the law. You cannot work on the Sabbath. Yeah, but when they were following Jesus around on the Sabbath and telling him not to work, wasn't that work? Weren't they working on the Sabbath? Jesus had a lot reserved. And this, we'll get more into this passage of Matthew 23 after we're done with Christmas this year. This is the preface, and there, I have a whole series planned starting on the day before New Year's, of talking about these seven woes that Jesus preached, because each of them could get pretty in-depth. But Jesus preached this to his disciples, and it's also a message to pastors. When I said people shouldn't be teachers because teachers are doubly accountable, teachers are more strictly judged, and that's why in my life I try to be transparent. I try to be letting people know what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, where I'm going, who I'm going with, all of those things. Because it's very easy to fell a minister with whispers. It's very easy if someone is living their life behind closed doors for people to start saying, what's going on back there? What's going on behind those closed doors? Why can't we see? And we like to say that our government should act like this, that everything should be open and we should know everything. We like to think that our ministers should be very open books so that everything can be looked at. And you know what? Those are not bad things. Those are good things to have. There have been many pastors who have had their ministries completely destroyed because they were seen in a restaurant with a woman who wasn't their wife. And it doesn't matter if they were counseling them. It doesn't matter if that was their insurance agent coming to talk to them about their policies. It doesn't matter, no matter what that is, because the idea that they were doing something improper is enough to fell them. We were talking in Bible study this morning about words, the tongue, in James chapter 3. It's very, very hard to stop an idea. It's impossible to prove a negative. Someone can say that you're doing something wrong, and it's very, very hard to prove that you aren't. That idea will stick in people's minds and keep them thinking bad things about you. Now, as Christians, we're supposed to go directly to somebody if we have a problem. But honestly, how often does that happen? Pastors are supposed to be very good at this, of saying, oh, say George has a problem with me. Sorry, George. And I'd go right to him and say, George, what's your problem? I've been hearing that you have an issue. And that's how it's supposed to work. Good communication, conflict resolution, all those things. But honestly, not a lot of people do that. Not a lot of people practice what they preach. And so Jesus is warning the disciples, if you are going to preach my name, you have to act the same way that you tell others to act. You have to behave the same way as you tell others to behave. And that last line about those who humble themselves will be exalted and those who exalt themselves will be humbled, or vice versa. He's telling them what's going to happen. If you go out and you preach to other people that you have to show love and you have to love your neighbor as yourself, but you're not doing it, it's not going to work. Those people will pick up on the fact that you're not living out the life, and they won't follow. And your ministry will fall down. Now, only one of the disciples really messed up, but he didn't get very far after messing up. That was Judas. And the other 11 we've talked about over the past year. And we've seen that they lived it out. That even though Peter messed up at the crucifixion and fell away, he was able to come back. And that all 11 of the other disciples followed Jesus and lived the lives that they said that they were living. Now he talks a little bit about the Pharisees. And he says they loved their wide phylacteries and their long tassels. For those of you who know your Mosaic law going back to Exodus, the wide phylacteries were from the book of Deuteronomy. You're supposed to keep a box on your forehead or on your hand. And that would contain the Ten Commandments. And you were supposed to always touch them whenever you prayed. And you were supposed to keep another box on the mantle of your door of your house. And you would touch it whenever you went in or went out. And it would remind you of the Ten Commandments, of the commitment to God that Israel had made and his commitment to them. But Jesus is saying that these Pharisees got into the habit of making really big ones, walking around with a bread box sticking off the front of their head. And so everybody would see, oh, look, he has the phylactery. You know, he's very important. He's remembering our ancestors and our God. And they would make the tassels on their robes really long. According to Mosaic law, you had to have a certain amount of tassels. And they would make them really long and really obvious. And it was supposed to be that the length and number of the tassels directly corresponded to how your prayer life was going. Because there was a standard of where you were supposed to start and where you were supposed to end, and each tassel represented achieving a new level in prayer. And so the Pharisees would get really big, nice, fancy tassels. Now we see this a little bit in modern day church. If you know anything about the Eastern Orthodox or Russian Orthodox churches, the way that their priests go in the large churches, and I told you a little bit about this, when I went to Israel, I went to the Church of the Nativity. It was the church where it was supposedly built over the spot where Jesus was born in Bethlehem. And this church is an Eastern Orthodox church now. And when the priest came out, he didn't walk out. He was carried out on this large throne. And his crown was 2.5 feet tall. And he had a big flowing robe with gold and stuff draped on him. And he was carried out by four big guys and placed over there on the side, right next to Keith, of the sanctuary. And that's where he sat the rest of the service. And he didn't really take part in the service at all. He was just there, presiding over. And there was a bit of a snafu a couple of years ago where the head of the Russian Orthodox Church in Russia was doing press photos and he was signing some documents. And they had to Photoshop out the $25,000 gold watch that he was wearing while he was doing it, because he was supposed to be talking about compassion and helping those in poverty. It's so easy for people who have trust placed in them, for people who the rest of the people invest into them, to take advantage of that and start saying, well, I deserve these things. I deserve to have the good life. I deserve that other people should know that I have the good life. We see this quite a lot in larger African-American churches, where the pastors become the epitome of what the people in their community want. And so the church gives them a new car. The church gives them a great big office. And the church gives them titles and all of these things. There was a pastor down in Atlanta who was presiding over a mega church. And he got into a legal problem because someone broke into his office and stole $700,000 worth of black diamonds. Why would you have $700,000 worth of black diamonds in a church office? No good reason for that. But it's easy for people who are put up on a pedestal to start acting like they belong there. And I was thinking about this after I went to the ordination council a couple of weeks ago. And they asked me at the end of it, why are you seeking ordination? And I said, well, I really don't actually care about it. All it is another couple of letters in front of my name. I don't need other people to recognize me and the Holy Spirit working inside of me in order to do the work of God. I have already been chosen by God, and the fact that this church has given me a position where that I can preach the word and do the work of the Lord, that's enough for me. But I know that it's important to other people that I be here. I know that it's important to other people that I get that REV in front of my name. I said, my reason for being here is my wife really wants to throw me a party. And if I don't do it, she'll be very upset. And my parents would very much like it that I be recognized. But as for me, I'm already doing what the Lord has given me to do. And I'm proud of that. The dangers of status are very dangerous. And Jesus tells them you have to be a servant. And he showed that off before his crucifixion when he washed the disciples' feet. And Peter said, no, I should be doing this for you. And Jesus said, no, I'm the servant. God, the servant, the creator of heavens and earth, the one who created the very air we breathe and made it so the disciples could live each day and keeps the sun coming up in the morning, keeps the earth rotating, all that kind of stuff, got down on his hands and knees and washed the disciples' feet to be their servant. And so, with this verse, Jesus is warning them, don't ever get a big head. And I know a lot of you wives out there think it's your duty on earth to make sure your husband doesn't get a big head either. Not exactly what Jesus was talking about. I just had to throw that in there. But he's saying to the disciples, you are placed on this earth to serve. You are not to be served. You are not to get the first place in line. You are not to get special accolades or take special privileges with your work. I talked a little bit about this with the disciple who went to Egypt and they tried to build a temple for him after he healed someone. I'm trying to remember outside my head which one it was because I just forgot. Tip of the tongue kind of thing. But he went there and they said, oh, well, you have just performed miracles. Let us build a temple for you. Let us begin to worship you. Let us sacrifice to you. And he said, no, none of that. I think it was Philip. I'll look it up afterwards. I had it already in my notes, but I didn't write it down. The danger of not writing things. It is our job as Christians to serve the world. Not to be of the world, but to be in it, to be helping the people who are of the world to realize that there is a better world for them. It is not our job to go around saying, we are Christians, respect us, honor us. It is our job to go around saying, we are Christians, how may we serve you? And by our service, by our grace that we show, and by the love that we show for other people, that is how we share Christ. And that is how they will see Christ in us. And through us, they will enter into Christ and be our brothers and sisters. That whole call no one father because you are all brothers thing is part of that. No one is placed as a teacher above anyone else. Don't ever let yourselves think that I, because I'm the pastor, am somehow above you. I was just given a different set of skills that allow me to teach. But I am your brother, and you are my brothers and sisters. And all of us across the world, in the name of Jesus, are brothers and sisters together. And so let us do the work that he has entrusted us, the work that he gave us before the beginning of time, and the work that we were each created to do. Whether we are high or low, we are all given a job, a responsibility, to be the servants